This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Caitlin Glover. Caitlin is with the Public Lands Council and NCBA. She'll join us in just a moment. First off, Mark Jackanowski, chair of the World Ag Outlook Board.
We're carrying that forward into the new crop as well, and that's supported by a few things. So we got a 3 million ton increase for 2025-2026 for India, raising their total production to 151 million tons. A couple things supporting that, and in particular, India raised their minimum support price for rice, so that should encourage some acreage and production. And also, they've had a really good early start to their monsoon season. So they're a couple weeks ahead of where they were last year in terms of the rainy season across the key growing areas of India. So we expect that's going to both encourage acreage and support yield prospects as well.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today we're joined by Caitlin Glover. Caitlin is Executive Director for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Public Lands Council and PLC. And Caitlin, it's always great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Tony. Great to be here.
All right. First off, I know it's the elevator speech, but we like to get it every time we have you on the air. Public Lands Council, who are you? What do you do?
Yeah. So the Public Lands Council represents cattle and sheep producers in the West who utilize federal lands, those lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service, as part of their grazing operations. We're looking at several hundred million acres across the West that help to feed and grow beef and lamb and wool in this country. And it's a different relationship than a lot of people have with a lot of their business operations when the government is the landlord for a lot of these grazed acres. So the Public Lands Council represents the unique interests of those permittees in the West and is really able to leverage those producers' engagement and the role they play in the national industries as part of these larger federal conversations.
You and I've had the opportunity to talk for quite some time in your role there as executive director. There have been some challenges in the past, some big challenges, but there have also been some big victories, and we'll touch on those in just a moment. One that I want to kind of tee up for you right now is something that involves a 10-year study, and this deals with the sage grouse. So first off, let's back up and talk about the sage grouse. What are we talking about? And then work into the study.
You know, Tony, I always call this this particular bird everyone's favorite bird, because there is something that's just so strange about this bird that lives in the West. They look a bit funny. They have a very funny mating dance. But they really have become a fixture of a lot of these natural resource conversations over the last 20 years or so, particularly because of the areas that they inhabit. And so on federal lands, and even on private lands across the West, we've been working on policy for at least the last decade about how you manage multiple uses on these landscapes. Because there are folks who want to use species like the sage grouse and their purported concerns for sage grouse in order to force uses like grazing off the land. You know, what we saw this last week was fantastic news. In an industry where we face a lot of challenges, this study, this 10-year long piece of work demonstrated what these ranchers in the West know to be true. That the way they graze their livestock, the careful attention that they pay, doesn't damage the bird's habitat, does not have a negative impact on chick recruitment and retention and their survivability in those early stages, but it actually helps. The way cattle graze, especially in that spring environment, allows for greater biodiversity, allows for all the different kind of bugs and things that grow in that ecosystem to feed those young chicks, to bolster populations in an environment that's, you know, otherwise kind of harsh and desolate. You need that careful management that livestock grazing provides. And it's so nice to have research, especially longitudinal research like this, confirm what these ranchers have been seeing, demonstrating, and been supporting for generations.
We're talking with Caitlin Glover of the Public Lands Council. More after this on the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our special guest today, Caitlin Glover, Executive Director, Public Lands Council. All right, Caitlin, let's talk. We're talking about a lot of things here. Sagegrass. We're also talking about the ability for cattlemen to graze public lands and to help manage kind of the multiple use, if you will. Are we seeing ground gained?
I think we are. I think there are a few things that are in play here. You know, the catastrophic wildfire crisis continues to grow each year because of federal land management policy. Livestock grazing controls those fine fuels that support, sort of in a backwards way, they support ignition of these big fires. And these fires then get rolling. They have such momentum. That's why they become so hot, so fast moving, and so catastrophic. You know, for a long time, one of the things that grazers, that ranchers have faced is this sort of, you know, being a second tier tool, a second class tool. The federal agencies have always preferred chaining or other mechanized efforts, prescribed fire, or even herbicides, because it's more standardized, right? But this role of targeted grazing, this expansion of using grazing animals to conduct fine fuels management at scale, is gaining traction. We have more than a handful of bills this Congress alone. We have very clear direction from the Secretary of the Interior in a recent memorandum. We have an executive order from President Trump identifying the need for USDA and DOI to work better together in not only putting these fires out, but preventing the catastrophic conditions and from those fires becoming too big. And so whether you're talking about sage grouse, or you're talking about fire and fuels management, or you're even just talking about protecting watersheds, right, from a various number of factors, you're really seeing grazing having a moment, right? It's not just goats in city parks, but it's cows and sheep and technology and drones and satellites and all of the big scientific and technology pieces coming together with one of the most traditional, reliable, effective tools in grazing. And it's exciting.
I can't recall which member of Congress said this. It was at a recent Interior hearing, and the Interior Secretary was there. But the comment was, and talking about the Endangered Species Act, ESA, how it's, we don't celebrate trying to move the population off of it. It's as if we're celebrating putting things on that ESA. Are we seeing things lining up to the point to where there could be a change in the way we look at ESA?
I think this, much like wildfire, there is a groundswell of support for changing the way we look at ESA. I mean, and you're right. To put a finer point on this, The problem that we've had within the catastrophic wildfire federal policy space is that the agencies have gotten to a posture that they've been so afraid to do anything because anything will have an impact on the landscape, good or bad. And so inaction has led to the conditions that perpetuate catastrophic wildfire. ESA is much the same, right? We're very good at sort of hitting that panic button and saying, oh no, this species is in trouble. But then we take all of the steps that the law provides for us. And then we say, okay, well, now we're afraid to do anything. We're afraid to delist. We're afraid of the litigation risk. We don't know what comes on the other side if we return to normal management. And we're just going to manage from a position of fear rather than a position of policy. And so you're seeing, you know, this, you've seen this contraction or this sort of intractability of ESA over time that is being recognized by Republicans and Democrats alike, that we can't manage from this position of fear. We can't manage from this position of inaction. We have to allow the policy to play out. Because if things go badly in the future, or if something happens, you can always push that panic button again, but it doesn't mean that you can sort of hold that panic button forever and ever, amen, simply because you're concerned that something might happen, right? You know, I often say to folks who are worried about engaging in the ESA space or concerned about a post-delisting celebration, right? Is that you want to be able to allow the law to work, the process to work for the species it's supposed to work for. You have to be able to have a mechanism to say good job, to be able to celebrate those successes and be able to have a deregulatory atmosphere. Because if you're never able to recover a species and then get it off the list, you're setting the agency up, you're setting ranchers up, you're setting the entire ecosystem up for a tighter and tighter squeeze, a deeper and deeper set of regulations. We have several bills in this Congress that are closer, I think, than I have seen, certainly in my career here. The ESA Amendments Act by Congressman Chairman Westerman. We have a number of species-specific issues. And when you take all of those things combined, the environment is as positive as I've seen in quite some time.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Caitlin Glover, Public Lands Council. All right, Caitlin, coming up, Flagstaff, September. Why is that on our calendar?
Yeah, so we are excited at the Public Lands Council. We are taking our annual meeting to Arizona. So we are going to be having our meeting in September 16th through 18th in Flagstaff, Arizona. We are going to have some discussions about wildfire, of course, and some of the policy that we work on, how we integrate technology, what our partnerships can look like. We're going to talk a lot about multiple use as well and the future of these public lands, how grazing plays into it, and how larger coalitions can support grazing and multiple use activity, and really what it means to be a cattle and sheep producer in this kind of environment. There's a lot of stuff going on right now in trade and economics and even in the animal health space. And our producers will have access not only to discuss policy, but access to some of those leading experts in those areas at the Public Lands Council annual meeting this September.
All right. We want to know more about the Public Lands Council, PLC. Where do we find you?
So you'll visit our website, publiclandscouncil.org. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and of course, always here with Tony St. James.
The executive director of the Public Lands Council is Caitlin Glover. I'm Tony St. James, and this is the Agribusiness Report.
How would you like to get high-speed internet for your home for less than $2 a day? That's right. For about $50 a month, you'll get lightning-fast internet. Are you paying less than $50 a month right now for your internet? Then call Whole Home Connect right now for blazing fast internet at $50 a month with no price increases, no hidden fees, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. It's a great deal. And guess what? You can try it for 15 days. If you don't like it, you get your money back. But you're going to love it. And you're going to love the price. Internet for your home for $50 a month. That's less than $2 a day. Plus, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees, and our 15-day guarantee. Call now. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. That's 800-923-9018.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Deadlines for application of USDA grant funding to develop and expand local agricultural markets.
Applications have to be submitted by June 27th. If you are looking to apply to that, you would do that through the grants.gov website.
Tricia Kovacs of the Agricultural Marketing Service says the Local Agriculture Market Program has $26.5 million available through three programs.
And those are the Farmers Market Promotion Program, the Local Food Promotion Program, and the Regional Food Systems Partnership Grants.
AMS offers request for application webinars to help new applicants navigate the process. In addition, AMS's grants website, www.ams.usda.gov/services/grants, offers a frequently asked questions page, as well as grant management specialists available to assist with applications.
Always recommend that people start early and go into that system and start their application.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.